This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Hey, 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 happy new year, and welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, with episode number 617. Some of you listeners have been with me since episode one. I know that, and I thank you. I appreciate you so much. For those who haven't, I want to mention something about our archives, which you've probably all noticed, and I've mentioned it before, I believe. But on iTunes, if you listen through iTunes, we had to split the archives up because iTunes does not hold enough episodes. We've got so much free content for you that we had to divide them up, and we did so by 100 episodes each. So if you run out of episodes, remember, there are now separate feeds in iTunes and separate RSS feeds for each 100 episodes. So I just want you to know that. I honestly do not know the way that works on other platforms, and I have not had time to check. So if you're listening on Stitcher Radio or SoundCloud or any of the other zillions of podcast platforms out there, just know that the feed has been segmented because we've got too many episodes, too much great free content for you. Make sure you look for it that way. There are 617 episodes as of today. And today our guests will be those guys. Yep, the real estate guys, Russell Gray and Robert Helms. They'll be up with us in a few minutes. And I actually interviewed them when I was speaking at a recent conference about a month ago in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that was the IMN Residential, what the heck did they call it? It was such a complicated name. These sophisticated people like to use these really sophisticated names. It was like the Residential Aggregation Conference or some some crazy name like that. But IMN is a conference company that does conferences, and it stands for Information Management Network. They do conferences on a variety of subjects, but I think about half of their portfolio is in the real estate world in some way or another. And I was grateful to have the opportunity to speak to their audience and present some of my thoughts on holding for the long term versus flipping out and selling. As I've said for many, many years, I have seen, I've done thousands and thousands and thousands of real estate transactions now. I wish I actually knew the number, and I've thought about, wouldn't it be nice to really know that number, what it is? You know, when I was a traditional real estate agent, I remember at age 24, ripe old age of 24, that was just a couple of years ago, right? I sold 78 homes when I was working at RE/MAX. I remember how jealous some of these older people that had been very successful for many years were. They thought I was somehow cheating the system. They used to have big powwows about me and how I was cutting my commission to get business. And that wasn't true, occasionally I'd take a lower commission on a deal, but not that often, it was pretty rare. But they were convinced that the only way some young whippersnapper like myself could be successful is he must be doing something unethical or something anti-competitive in their eyes. Actually, that's more competitive is what it is. It's illegal to fix commissions. It's a violation of the antitrust laws. And aren't we glad those are around? Even though I would say that in one form or another, big companies engage in a form of price fixing. You know, a lot of this is very subtle, right? There are software systems that, you know, scan the internet and find out what your competitors are charging for their product or service. And, you know, you charge just a penny less. And, you know, it's basically, isn't that a form of price fixing? Isn't that anti-competitive in a way? Or, you know, some would argue that it's more competitive, but none of this stuff is perfect. Capitalism isn't perfect. It's just better than everything else. And speaking of which, another one of my predictions are coming true. Yes, they are coming true. I've made some wrong predictions in my day, but this is another one that has come true. Yes, pardon me while I pat myself on the back here. Arrogant little host here. No, this prediction, seriously. I saw a Newser article the other day, and it says, many find life cheaper without Obamacare. What a surprise. For some, the article says, the subtitle, it says, for some, fines are cheaper than health insurance. Now, we all know, because we're thinking people, we don't just take it as the gospel. And we don't even take the Supreme Court decision as the gospel. And we don't take what people consider to be science as the gospel. You know, one of my friends, my dear friend Danny, is a great guy, really, really super great guy. He was debating with me recently a message about global warming, or now they've conveniently changed the word to climate change because, you know, the global warming argument is so darn questionable, okay, whether that's true or not. And I'm not saying I have the answer, by the way. I'm just saying I have the questions. First of all, is it happening? Second, is it a problem? And here's what I actually mean by that. You know, if the Earth is warming, by the way, this is a tangent alert, but it won't take me long. If the Earth is actually warming, then doesn't that make all sorts of new places on Earth open to new habitable places for various species and people and crops and agriculture? Of course it does. So, you know, is it real? Which is very questionable, by the way. Is it bad? Is another question. And then a third question I would ask is, well, what is the cause? And the climate alarmists will tell you that the cause is carbon dioxide. Now, when I was less informed years ago, I used to think that their argument was about carbon monoxide. And it is about greenhouse gases, as they call them in general. But if it's carbon dioxide, you know, the stuff you exhale, then aren't these people just making the Earth a terrible place every time they exhale? And I haven't seen any of them voluntarily stop exhaling. I just haven't seen a movement about that. So, you know, herein lies the massive hypocrisy. It's the do what I say, not as I do movement. It's Arianna Huffington saying nobody should be allowed to drive an SUV. It's Hillary Clinton saying, and this is not an environmental thing, it's a gun control thing, another bunch of idiotic arguments that you hear all the time, saying, well, guns won't keep you safe, she says. And fortunately, Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he did call her out on this just the other day. He said, well, if guns don't keep you safe, then disarm your bodyguards. Ah, wait, I guess she's not going to do that, is she? And Dianne Feinstein, the same kind of lefty hypocrite, our senator here from the Socialist Republic of California, you know, she has carried a pistol in her purse for a couple of decades now, okay? You know, but gun control for everybody else, but not for the elites, not for the kings and the queens. They need to have bodyguards and guns and armor. The rest of us little people, you know, we don't get that. So anyway, science, I'm bringing it back here, folks. I apologize for my tangent, yet I know some of you people enjoy this. You're probably just making fun of me is what you're doing, right? But science, okay, and this is back to my friend Danny about the climate change, global warming thing, right? Science used to think that the Earth was flat. Science used to think that the sun revolved around the Earth. Science used to think that the entire universe revolved around the Earth, okay? Science used to believe in putting leeches on people They used to believe that bloodletting was good. Okay? Science used to believe in frontal lobotomies. Science now believes in all sorts of absolutely horrendous, disgusting prescription drugs that literally, quite literally, kill people. Just watch a movie called Rx Nation. I've done several shows on this on my Holistic Survival show. These pharmaceutical companies, I mean, they are, they got lots of blood on their hands, okay? And that's all about science, okay? So science is not like some monolithic thing that is this immovable thing, but it's not a pole either. You know, it's not about saying, oh, well, some scientists say this and some scientists say that. You know, there is the science we know at the time, and then we will know of other science at another time. So look at all the dietary and nutritional things that we used to believe that we don't believe now, right? The list is so long, I just couldn't even go into that. And I interview a lot of these scientists of the day on my longevity and biohacking show, okay? And they're only speaking of what they know today. And believe me, in 1 year, in 5 years, in 10 years, in 50 years, in 100 years, the science will say something different. I promise you that. So my friend Danny, who believes he is this very logical scientist, he's in medical school, by the way, says, well, I don't debate climate change anymore because I just look at the science. But yet lots of scientists disagree with this pseudoscience, many would say, of climate change. Okay? So, you know, the climate has always changed. I mean, there's a lot of debate for this stuff. It's not a cut and dry subject. Back to Obamacare and the impending Obamacare disaster. A good number of Americans are opting to forego health insurance altogether and pay a federal fine rather than buy Obamacare. The New York Times, well, there's a lefty organization. The New York Times reports this. The reason? Insurance policies may cost more than the fine, and the deductibles can be high, and people make too much money to get federal subsidies. Quote, I don't see the logic behind that, and I'm just going to do it, unquote, says Texas resident Clint Murphy, who prefers to face an $1,800 fine in 2016 than buy insurance for at least $2,900. The fine is still going to be cheaper. and so I predicted this. I said this would happen. I said this years ago when they passed the bill so that we could see what's in it, according to Nancy Pelosi, at midnight Pacific time and about 3 a.m. East Coast time, when all of those people were cheering, you know, all of those elites, all of the people in the ivory tower who just know so much better than all of us dummies, right? So there you go. Another prediction has come true. Thank you very much. Okay. So Carl Icahn, you know Carl Icahn, he's the corporate raider, some would call him. He's the, the incredibly successful businessman. I don't know how to describe these guys. They do so many things. It's, you know, like to say Warren Buffett is an investor is a joke, okay? Warren Buffett is way more than an investor, okay? So if you're thinking you can duplicate those types of returns that Buffett gets by investing as a non-insider, someone from the outside who is, you know, not involved in the modern version of organized crime known as Wall Street, you're just probably not going to be able to do that. In fact, you will probably be losing money to people like Warren Buffett because you're on the other end of the trade. You know, we've heard from Michael Lewis. Did you see the movie The Big Short yet? Oh my gosh, you've got to see this movie. It's so good, The Big Short. It's in theaters, folks. Do not miss this. In fact, you know, if you don't want to see it and you want to call in and, you know, call into Voxer, and if you don't have the money to go see The Big Short, the $10 for a ticket, and you have a PayPal account, heck, first 10 listeners call into Voxer with a comment, I will send you $10 to go see the movie, okay? I'll even send you $15. You can get some popcorn too. Well, actually, with inflation, Yes, there is inflation. That popcorn might cost you a little more. Maybe I'll have to send you $16. Okay? So, yeah. You know, I'll do that. 10 people, call in with a question or comment on the show. I mean, call in on Voxer, jhart88, J-H-A-R-T-88. And if you have a PayPal account and you send me your PayPal email address, I'll just send you the money. You go see the movie on me. Okay? How's that sound? Okay, I want to remind you of an article I discussed last year right about this time. And this is so important, folks. You know, we are investing for the future. We are delaying gratification. We, as investors, are doing the right things. But you know what? We have got to get some payoff out of that. Okay? We have got to get some payoff out of that. So this article that I had talked to you about, like a year ago, you know, it says, exercise. I'm just going to read you the title because I don't need to go into the detail, just the concept. New Year's resolution time, right? Exercise basically prevents, treats, what does it say? It says, exercise prevents, treats, or cures basically everything. It's a Business Insider article, and it says, exercise prevents, treats, or cures basically everything. Okay? If there were a drug that treated and prevented chronic diseases that afflict Americans, and we didn't give it to everyone, we'd be withholding a magic pill. If the drug was free in a country that spends more than $350 billion annually on prescription drugs, we just talked about that, where the average 80-year-old takes 8 medications, we'd be foolish not to encourage this cheaper and safer alternative as first-line treatment. And the alternative, this other treatment, this magic pill, it's simply exercise. And you know what, people? This is so easy. It is so easy. I bought my mom a Fitbit for Christmas. I'm wearing one myself right now. If you've seen me driving around my self-driving Tesla in those videos that are out there on YouTube, if you've seen me, you see that I'm wearing a watch and I'm wearing this black thing around my wrist. That's my Fitbit. And you know what? If you can just get 10,000 or more steps a day, like our wonderful Venture Alliance member, Elizabeth, who I believe will be at Meet the Masters this weekend. She's a huge Fitbit fan, and Elizabeth is doing it right. She's taken, I don't know, a lot more than 10,000 steps a day. So she's just awesomeness there. If you can do that, you know, you don't need to do much else. Cut down the carbs, cut down the sugar, and get your 10,000 steps in. Everything beyond that, icing on the cake. Go to the gym, do yoga, Pilates, lift some weights, whatever, do some running. That's all great, but you don't have to be a fitness freak. And you know what will help you with this 10,000 steps a day? Get a dog. A dog. Go rescue a dog. Do not get one from a breeder. Go rescue a dog from the animal shelter. I'm on my 5th one. For those of you coming to Meet the Masters this weekend, and maybe you haven't met Coco, she will be there. And she will be there talking about real estate investing. You know, she's very knowledgeable because she listens to virtually every podcast I do. She's here listening now. She hears the bloopers that the editor hopefully takes out. So yeah, enough of that. I got to run and I've got to interview Chris Martinson. We've had him on the show a few times. He's not on this episode today. We've got Russell and Robert on, but we've got to interview him for a future episode. And he is always the most interesting guest. He's a Malthusian, end of the world guy. We're running out of everything. We're climate change and, you know, species extinction and peak oil, and it's all a disaster. But you know what? He's so darn knowledgeable. This is why I get these opposing viewpoints on my show. I learn so much from them. He's a really interesting guy. And so he's been on a few times. I'm going to have him on again coming up. And we always relate this back to the economy. What I like is that Chris goes into the whole scam known as the Federal Reserve and the money creation concept. And it's just super interesting stuff. Okay. Interested in coming to Dubai with us? The Venture Alliance is doing the Dubai trip. just a little over a month away. Go to VentureAllianceMastermind.com. You can come as a guest. It's only $2,000. And if you want to join, then your guest fee will be applied toward your membership if you join right away. What else? Meet the Masters this weekend. We got a bigger room. If you're a last-minute guest, come on in. We'd love to have you. We actually have space. We will not be cramped this time. And we are doing an awesome event. Oh, by the way, in addition to Garrett Sutton, we just booked Tom Wheelwright, who is an author of another Rich Dad book on taxation. We just booked his partner. He can't come, but he's sending his lead person. That's Casey Myers, who is another CPA and partner in his firm. He will be speaking on Sunday about taxation as it applies to real estate investors. Of course, you real estate investors are holding the most tax favored asset in America and the most historically proven asset in the world. We are just going to have an awesome Meet the Masters event. So we're looking forward to it. And we are kicking it off with a invite-only private VIP dinner Friday evening. If you're coming to that, look in your email for details. Make sure you check your spam folder. For Saturday morning, we are starting at 9:30 at the hotel. So come down and have coffee with us at 9 a.m., but the actual event will be on at 9:30. So I know a lot of you like to get there so early. No need to. This is not the Beatles. We're just not that interesting. It's not Taylor Swift. More contemporary there, right? So just show up at 9 a.m. and network, have some coffee, hang out, and we will start at 9:30 on Saturday morning. And it looks like we're going to go until 9 p.m. on Saturday night. Yes, 11 and a half hours of hardcore content. But we'll have some good breaks in there for lunch and dinner and, you know, maybe even a bathroom break here or there. And we got a bunch of great speakers lined up for you. And then Sunday, our plan is to go from 9 to 6 p.m. And if you've registered for Meet the Masters at jasonhartman.com in the events section, you've got the location. Hopefully you've got your hotel room booked. And we can't wait to see you there this weekend. And we thank you so much for coming. It's going to be our best one ever. I just signed the contract with our audiovisual company, and man, we're spending some money to make these events really good. By the way, one more thing on that. Anybody attending the event who dances, yes, I actually am serious about this. Any dancers listening, we would love to talk to you. If you want to reach out to me on Voxer or through your investment counselor, Voxer is jhart88. Reach out to me. Just download the free Voxer, V-O-X-E-R app in your app store. Reach out to me if you dance, because we got a little job for you, okay? Enough said. And I actually am serious about that. Distinguished corporate job. This is not some hokey thing. Let's get to the real estate guys and hear what they have to say about investing and what is coming next, some predictions for the new year. So here we go. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome the real estate guys to the show, Russell Gray and Robert Helms. You probably know these guys. And we are at the IMN Residential. Well, this conference has a couple of names, actually. I've heard it called the Single Family Aggregation Conference. What a name. Or the Rental Investment Conference. They're here recording, so I just thought I'd love to get them on the show and talk about some predictions for the new year. Guys, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having us, Jason.
Good.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So, you know, a big question has been asked over the years of, are we really in a recovery? Of course, the powers that be, the Obama administration, they want us to think we're in a recovery. I question that a lot, and I think you guys do too. What are your thoughts? Because we have to start with where we are in order to talk about the future, right?
Yeah, such a good point. Everybody wants to know what's going to happen in the future, and there is the law of expectancy, right? If I expect things to be pretty good, then guess what? I'm going to arrange my life in such a way that they're going to be pretty good. So, you know, in real estate, you can make money in an up market, in a down market, in a sideways market, but you've got to change your strategy and your thinking. When we layer on that the bigger economic picture, that's where it gets fuzzy, because a lot of the market and a lot of the data we get, let's face it, it's manipulated information. What we're hearing about, say, here at the conference. Yesterday morning, we heard about unemployment. Unemployment is down. Well, is it really?
Yeah.
How do they figure it? What numbers do they use? If they're only counting factual numbers, they're leaving out all kinds of people in the unemployment. So there's a lot fewer people with jobs today than there have been in the past.
Right.
And the kinds of jobs they have are very different. So that's great for real estate investors, because guess what we have more today? Tenants.
Yep.
More tenants than owners. Well, if I'm in the business of selling houses to owners, that's real estate, then I'm not as happy. If I'm in the business of long-term rental property that is going to create cash flow and appreciate over time in the right markets, then that's good news for me.
Yep.
Right? So where are we is always an interesting question.
Well, that was, you know, you led into exactly what I'm always talking about, how income property is a multidimensional asset class.
Yes.
And you can make money up, down, sideways, does not matter. You just need to adjust your strategy. So the two things that really hurt real estate investors is that they don't adjust. So, you know, you talk about, you know, we have this mass market of tenants, right? And that's great for rental incomes and upward pressure on rents and demand.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe overall the sales market isn't as robust as it otherwise would be if people had real corporate jobs that pay 70 grand a year versus, you know, they're like yoga teachers and bartenders, right?
Right. And those folks are hard to finance. So, right, the traditional, you know, real estate, single family real estate,
right,
like this conference is about, your borrower is a person who gets up, goes to work, earns the money, can qualify for a mortgage. Harder and harder to get mortgages. Well, I don't know if that's really true. It's been hard to get mortgage in the last few years. We're starting to see that change. We're starting to see players come back into the market who are looking through different lenses, recognizing that today's knowledge worker doesn't necessarily have a W-2 income and their assets may be different than folks in the past. So I think there is the light at that end of that tunnel.
Yeah.
And the big picture, population is increasing. Housing stock is getting older. We need more units.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. And that's the other great thing about real estate is that, you know, there's just some hard issues there. Population increase and housing stock, which is hard to create. You know, it's not like creating a little widget and making it come off an assembly line. You've got land entitlement issues. You've got cities to deal with. You've got, you know, it's complicated, right,
to develop real estate. And with technology, I mean, look at the very fact that today we're able to both have podcasts that are heard by people in different states and different countries is all about technology, right? Traditional radio, it didn't work like that.
Right.
Technology is changing a lot in the way real estate gets articulated, but here's what technology doesn't do. No technology is going to change the need for a human being to live under a roof.
Oh, no question about that.
So housing, and then, you know, single family housing at this conference, and of course, you know, you're obviously very involved with that, and multifamily housing, those are needs that are going to be here. I don't know about the latest app, if that's going to be a need I'm always going to have. How did I live before Facebook? What happens if Facebook changes? I don't know. But we know people are going to have to live somewhere, conduct business somewhere, vacation somewhere, right? Real needs.
That's one of the absolute beauties of our industry, is that it's just a hard need, and every human being on Earth has that in common. They need the three basic things: food, clothing, shelter, right?
Right.
Let them rent that shelter from you, investors.
There you go.
yeah, absolutely. Russell, you know, you were talking about one of the panelists that you were listening to yesterday. I think someone from one of the Federal Reserve branches, and they were talking about this employment, unemployment issue and the labor participation rate. Any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, I think big picture, you said, what state are we in? I think we're in a state of confusion, actually, because a lot of the data is, you know, manipulated. And you have people, as you mentioned, that have an agenda behind the data that they put out there. And you can say, well, oh, they have evil intent. I don't know. I'm not inside their heart and mind. I don't really know that. But what I do know is these are people who have their hands on the levers of major economic controls, and they are trying to move certain numbers. And sometimes I think they get it backwards, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes people go, oh, housing drives the economy. No, housing is a reflection of a healthy economy. You don't go buy a house and then get a job. You get a job and then you buy a house. And
good
so,
point.
You know, you say, well, if we could just move the housing number, that's like saying, okay, well, you know what? 98.6 degrees is a healthy human being. This body's dead. Let's put it in the oven and warm it up, and then we'll have it be alive. But it isn't
morbid,
alive.
It's
zombie economics is what I call it. So the guy was talking about the labor participation rate being low, which means there's less people in the population who are actually participating in being employed, right? That's what a low labor participation rate is, and it's the lowest it's been in four decades. And so they're blaming that on the baby boomers. And so that's completely inaccurate, because if you look underneath the labor participation rate and where the jobs are being created, the jobs are being created in the age 55 and over group. The baby boomers are actually having to come out of retirement because they're not getting a yield on their savings, and they're having to earn more money. And so it's the younger, the millennials, that are not getting the jobs.
Right.
And they're burdened with student debt. There's 40%+ of them living at home, you know, under age 30.
That is insane. But you know what that represents, Russ?
Pent-up demand.
Huge pent-up demand. I mean, because you know those kids do not want to live with their parents forever.
Right.
Now, I've heard Gen Y, you know, representatives in the news media talk about how, you know, we actually like our parents, this generation, right? Versus every other wanted to get away from home, right? So that's interesting, but they don't want to be living at home for.
Well, I mean, ultimately,
too long,
these kids, and I have a bunch of them, you know, and some of them have already gotten married. Others are going to.
How many do you have?
Six.
Oh, wow.
I've got six kids and nine grandkids, and probably adding to that eventually. And we all get along, and it's great. And, you know, we have the boomerang kids, like a lot of people. They come, and then they leave, and then they come back. And, you know, it just depends on their life cycle. You know, we did a little bit of that as we were growing up. So, you know, families help each other, and that's kind of a normal, natural thing. But eventually, as a young person, you get to a season in life where you settle down. And at whatever point that happens, housing is going to be high on their priority ladder,
right,
probably higher than anything else. And, I got to believe that you are not going to keep the United States of America down for long. You know, even if we do have some economic distress, people figure it out, right? People always figure it out. Robert and I were, we call it petroleum transfer agents.
Yes.
Yes, we were petroleum transfer agents in one of our early jobs.
You pumped gas. I love it.
We were pumping gas in San Jose, California. We didn't know each other back then.
I can see you meeting your wives at the time, you know. So what do you do for a living? I'm a petroleum transfer agent.
That's
right. A big title.
That's right, petroleum transfer agent. But we watched gasoline back in the day when I was in high school go from, you know, 40 cents a gallon all the way up to 80, 90 cents. I remember when it crossed over a dollar. All that happened in high school. The dollar lost 50% of its value in the 70s.
Yeah.
Some people think, oh, that couldn't happen in the United States. It already has.
Right.
And other people think, well, if it happens, it's the end of the world. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not at all. So, you know, yes, things are changing. And you said this at the top of the show, the concept that, you know, sometimes real estate investors don't change. That's one of the big mistakes they make. I would agree with that. And I think by their nature, real estate investors are kind of mavericks. They're independent thinkers. They're nose to the grindstone, lost in the weeds, handling stuff on a daily basis. And what they miss are some of these big mega trends that are moving both economically, demographically, and even in some cases geographically. You're just busy with your nose to the grindstone. You don't realize that a market is changing. Dallas-Fort Worth, for example. For the longest time, Dallas-Fort Worth could just expand as far as the eye could see. You could add housing units as long as the day was long. Los Angeles used to be like that too. And at one point, it crossed. It crossed over, and one city ran into the next city, and pretty soon there was just a blur of construction. Dallas is moving down that path. And because of it, its housing market is changing. As those numbers begin to change, it becomes less of the market that it used to be that attracted so much attention. It used to be a great cash flow market. It is still a good market, but it isn't the great, strong cash flow market that it once was, right?
Yeah. Because, and the reason is that, the rents have increased a little bit in Dallas, for example, and this is true in a lot of cities, of course. Phoenix is the same way, and we know all the markets that this is true in. But the prices go up always much faster than rents, and so rents always have to catch up. They always lag the price curve, and so that's why it doesn't have the cash flow it used to have. You know, you could buy that same house in Dallas a few years back for $80,000 that now you're going to pay $120,000 for. So, and $120,000 is kind of the entry level for a quality investment property in Dallas, you know, and then it goes up from there. Yeah, of course you can get C and D class anywhere and pay, you know, a lot less, but.
But
good luck collecting
your
rent.
That very house that at $80,000 rented for $800 at $120,000 isn't renting for $1,200, right? It's renting for $900 or $950.
Exactly.
So harder to make the numbers work, and that's back to that strategy. You change as a real estate investor based on what the market gives you.
Right.
There were times when flipping property was a no-brainer because of the value of the market. You didn't have to do that much.
Right.
Today, you have to be strategic in that business. And,
sure.
And we're not in the flipping business, and you're not really in that business either, right? But there are folks that's what they do, right?
Yep.
So when we talk about real estate, there's so many different ways to play.
Oh, of course there are. Okay, so I want to ask you one more thing about where we are now, because you mentioned technology, and this just begs that question. Then let's talk about where you think we're going, okay? Because everybody wants a prediction, so dust off your crystal ball and let us know. But when it comes to technology, there are some things going on in the real estate world. You know, we deal with a low-tech product, which is great because it can't be disrupted easily.
Right.
But, you know, I keep reading about and seeing videos online about 3D printed houses. Of course, you've seen this stuff too. Yeah. Now, the thing people have to realize is even though you can 3D print a house, and barely anybody's doing it. There's like a couple of experimental cases. This is not an impact thing in the market, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Maybe it will be someday. But those 3D printed houses still use actual commodities and materials, okay? Even if the construction is a little bit easier, and maybe you save labor costs, possibly making downward price pressure, right? They're still built from commodities, whether they be plastic or lumber or, you know, well, they don't build 3D with lumber, but you know, mostly petroleum-oriented products, right? And so concrete-oriented products. So what do you think about that? Is there any disruption possible? I mean, I don't think there's any big disruption coming our way until we actually, like, live in a force field. Something really futuristic. Okay.
You know, back when Russ and I were petroleum transfer agents, cars had carburetors.
Yeah.
And today they have fuel injectors.
Right.
So the technology is completely different.
Or they have electric motors.
Or electric motors. And in all those cases, the car still does what the car does. So houses will be built and construction methodology will hopefully continue to improve.
Yeah.
That's great for pricing. That's great for value.
And it might be better quality.
It might last longer.
Yeah. So maybe the thing there will be that, you know, people don't pay less for the house. They just get a better house. You know, like, look, this iPhone is much better than the first phone I bought, which was $3,200 and I financed it.
Right.
Okay. So it's not like, you know, it has to be a price thing. It might just be a better quality, better standard of living issue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Plus, there's the technology overlay of, you know, the smart house and the way that systems are changing within.
Nest thermostats, and so forth,
which is great. All that's great for progress, and it's great for real estate investors. If I can have a more stable understanding of my expenses, they may not go down, but if they're more stable, if I know, depending on where you buy. If you buy in California, there's a very good chance that your roof will last through its entire life. If you buy in Texas, it's impossible for a roof to last 40 years because there's going to be a hailstorm sometime. Right. So if you're near the ocean, you have different maintenance.
Okay.
And so I think there's a lot of exciting things happening in technology for construction. But from the investor's standpoint, it's all good.
Yeah.
Right? That will do is increase our ability to rely on whatever the numbers are going to be.
I agree. And one thing that really struck me, by the way, and I don't want to get off on this tangent, but maybe another show, is how mature this industry is getting. Like being at this conference and hearing all, you know, this is becoming a mature, less fragmented industry.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, with these guys owning 3,000 homes, 1,700 homes, I've heard a lot of speakers, you know, talk about 10,000 homes.
Right.
I mean, this is becoming a more mature. And I think yields will compress ultimately as it matures, like in any industry.
Well,
right?
there's your crystal ball.
Yeah.
We're already seeing it happening,
yeah.
right? As soon as big money comes in, whether that are hedge funds or REITs or Wall Street, whoever's coming in to buy up a single family asset, right? Traditionally, this has been a mom and pop asset.
Yeah.
If you saw that.
And it still is.
And
I mean,
still
this is
a
drop in the bucket when we talk about this, but the direction is clear.
And it's right. By being at this event, it's clear that there is a change. There's a shift in who the buyer is.
Right.
And there's been that. We've seen that shift since, you know, 2008 when the big companies came in and snapped up inventory. Today, I think, though, the groups that you're talking about who have 1,500 homes, 3,000 homes, 4,500 homes, they are more nimble. They're smarter. They've gotten the lesson.
And they're doing humble single-family homes.
They are.
I mean,
which, again, I think bodes well for all of us in the single-family home space, right?
Right. Well, it'll push prices up and make rental. It'll probably push rents up, too, because institutional investors really crank those rental yields. Just go to any nice institutional apartment complex, and man, they charge a lot. Okay, so more crystal ball stuff. Anything?
I don't know about crystal ball stuff, but I mean, talking about the technology, I didn't really think when you first asked the question that much about technology from the standpoint of construction, although that was a good point. I look at it more in terms of the impact on marketing, on finding deals, on discovering bad markets sooner, good markets sooner. I think that the industry and the people in it are just a heck of a lot smarter.
Yeah, and the tools we have are so much better.
The tools, because the tools are there, because you have the data, and because you have access to the data, because you have access to a lot of people's opinions, and you can think faster, you can think through issues quicker, and you don't have to rely upon a conference, although conferences are great. You can listen to things like podcasts, radio shows, and you have access to all this information. And so it does make it harder if you are not keeping up. If you are not upgrading your education, if you're not paying attention to the data and thinking things through,
someone else is.
Someone else is, and you're going to, you know, when someone realizes a market is turning, you know, markets and Robert's due diligence class, he taught me that, you know, markets go through these progressions. They start out and they go through a growth phase, and then they go through a stabilization phase, and then they go through a decline phase, and then eventually they go through a revitalization stage. And of course, we're as a country, we're fairly mature.
And that's what societies do too.
That's what societies do, exactly. Right. That's exactly what goes on. And so if you can recognize where you are at in the cycle, you know how to organize your portfolio and make your moves. And it goes back to the theme that kind of evolved out of this whole conversation about adapting to change. And so the information that we have available to us to be able to see the change coming, the people who respond quicker and either get out of the way of something bad or jump on the wave of something good are going to be doing better faster. And there will be a divergence between the people who are lazy and the people who are innovative, because the amount of time and effort it takes to get the information you need to make better decisions is no longer cost prohibitive. Right. It used to be only the big guys can do it.
The world is flattening. Everybody has access to Zillow. You know, everybody has access to Google Street View and Google Earth and all these great tools. The subtext, you didn't mention it, but like I was hearing the subtext there of it's a great opportunity because now every investor can geo-arbitrage their investing. You don't have to think like this provincial local investor. You know, one of the speakers, I'm sure you heard this panelist yesterday, who said that, it was like 80% of the single family homes owned by investors in the country are owned by people that live within 10 miles.
Right.
I may have not got those numbers exactly, but the theme was that still mom and pop invest close to home, but the more sophisticated investor listening to things like our podcast, you know, they get it that you don't have to be stuck. If you live in LA, which is completely overpriced, landlord unfriendly, I grew up there, I know what it's like, okay? You know, you don't have to invest there anymore.
Right.
You've got tools now that allow you to be geographically free. And so you can geo-arbitrage pricing and rents and laws and regulatory environments. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, and the point is, through technology, you can discover those markets, you can build relationships, and you can go get connected in ways that were completely impossible before. If you think about it, you know, I used to watch the old show, and Jason, you're probably too young to remember this, Robert will remember this, called Big Valley.
I remember that.
Remember
show,
Big Valley?
But I never watched it. But
okay,
I used to watch it when I was a little kid,
I used to watch Big Valley, and it was about this ranching family in Stockton. I believe they were in Stockton in Central California. It was
the foreclosure capital of the world.
Big deal when they needed to go to, you know, Sacramento, to the state capital.
Right.
It was a big deal, right? They'd load up the horses, they'd load up the provisions, and they would go, and it'd be a multi-week trek just to get to Sacramento.
Yeah.
That's an extreme example, but think how technology has changed people's ability to access other markets. Today, I mean, you know, I get dental work done in Tijuana, Mexico. And because it's cheaper and it's better quality.
How do your teeth look?
Can you get close to the radio? Can you see?
Yep.
My point is, I discovered that online, and I was able to get on an airplane.
You can arbitrage medical. I mean, medical tourism is a big deal.
That's another huge opportunity. But again, I get on the plane in the morning, I fly down to San Diego, I get out, I rent a car, I drive over the border, get my work done, and by that afternoon, I'm back home having dinner with my wife, right?
You couldn't do that before.
That's what technology has done, and it's done a lot for real estate investors. Of course, people who decide not to take advantage of it are stuck investing in their own backyard, right?
And their backyard may not be the right yard.
In most cases, it's not. And
even if it is, they won't be diversified. Okay, so say they live in the best city in which to invest at that particular point in time.
Right.
They still won't be diversified. And, you know, I don't know what you guys say, but I say you got to be in three markets.
I think three is a great number, right? I think 21 is too many. Right? You want to be diversified because
here's one of the mistakes I freely admit that I made.
Yeah.
You know, the old intro to my show, I changed it. But it used to say, you know, own properties in 11 states and 17 cities, right? And that I over-diversified. So you can go too far with it.
A great point because you wouldn't necessarily think that if you've got wide eyes as an investor. Going, I want to own a lot of places.
The eyes are bigger than your stomach,
And how many relationships can you manage? Yeah. So I think three is a great number. Right. Four, right? Two.
Three to five, I say, but, you know.
There's not been a market that has ever been the number one greatest single market for a long period of time. Markets shift. And yet, as long-term buy and hold investors, we get married to a market.
Right.
We're going to be in a market for 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah. So hopefully 27.5.
Hopefully 27.5.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you make the adjustment market-wise, too. Right. You might today be in the perfect market to invest in, but that is going to change. So I think even if you're in a great market, look around.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very good points. Well, give out your website and any final thoughts. We got to wrap up. I got to be at lunch.
We're easy to find. We're at realestateguysradio.com. Still broadcasting on the radio after 19 years and podcasting like you do, Jason. And we're big fans of your show. We appreciate the time today and encourage your listeners to continue to put great ideas in their mind. And education is what always pays out the best returns.
Yeah, no question. And likewise, great thoughts. Any thoughts about predictions? Any final wrap up on that, though?
The market will either go up or down. Interest rates will either go up or down. The sun will come up and people will continue to need to live in houses. So there will always be opportunity.
And if you want to bet on something that's a sure thing, bet on yourself.
Yes.
There's nothing you should doubt except your own limits.
Right. Good points. Good points. Well, hey, guys, thanks for being on. It was great talking to you again.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jason.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.